Tua.
Fires. Touchdown, Miami. Waddle snuck into the end zone of Miami.
Boy, tight throw, tight window. They had to get that touchdown on that play to get it.
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins. How's it going, everybody? I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and as always, I am here for one more week to bring you your daily dose of Miami Dolphins football. We cut this thing down to three shows a week in the offseason, except for in the busy peak times. But on today's show, it's a deep dive Wednesday. We're going to compare the numbers between wins and losses this year, and a couple of very interesting data points between the two that I was curious to find out about, plus the thin margin for error in this game. We heard from the whole gamut of assistant coaches on Tuesday as well. We're going to play the highlights from those media availabilities from somewhere in South Florida. This is the Drive Time Podcast.
That's another Miami Dolphins.
I want to go ahead and start the podcast here with the assistant coaches media sessions from Tuesday. It was a long one. Getting all these guys on Zoom takes longer than it does on the in-person meetings. But we get through it, and we talk to them one-on-one with these good questions, and there was all kinds of good stuff today. If you have not done so, all the coordinators will be up on YouTube, not the assistant coaches. They'll have sound for some of those guys for you here on this podcast. Let's go ahead and pick it up with Coach George Godsey, Dolphins co-OC and tight ends coach, who was asked about the idea of being more aggressive in the downfield passing game, and if the Dolphins had more experience on the offensive line, if they could have done that more throughout the course of the season. Here's Coach Godsey on just that.
Yeah, I mean, that's where most of the passing game starts, is protection. So whether it's a matchup that we could do better on, or it's executing our job as a protector, whether it's back, a lineman, or a tight end, that group's gotta give the quarterback enough time for the receivers to get open too. And if we're having to get the ball out of our hands because we're getting pressure, then we can't get the ball downfield. So a lot of that plays into how the game is being played and how the matchups end up being. You know, we had some guys in there moving around a little bit. Liam's learning and improving each game. Austin's going inside. You know, we've had some rotation going on at center. Right side seemed to be pretty consistent as far as health-wise. So all those variables take place into calling a play. And, we want to make sure we give our guys the best opportunity to execute that play. So protection, depth of route, pattern, options for the quarterback, all that goes into any play call or play design.
As thorough as he always is there with Coach George Godsey. Let's go ahead and go back to Coach real quick. I asked him a question about personnel usage this season, because we talked all offseason long, right, about how this Dolphins receiving core was super deep. And obviously, you lose one of the top key guys you're banking on, Will Fuller, early in the season. Devontae Parker misses a few games. You're right without Jalen Waddle for one game. Preston Williams up and down throughout the course of the season. Isaiah Ford comes back. Albert Wilson has a kind of fluctuating role. All of a sudden, the depth seems like it's not what we expected back in training camp. And again, injuries and attrition has a way of having that happen. But here's Coach Godsey on the utilization of so much 12 personnel, which led the league by a substantial number this season with two tight ends on the field.
You know, starting the season and how we finish, there's probably a lot of variables that have come up, whether it's injuries or especially receiver position, in and out of the lineup. Obviously, we've had some injuries there too that people have played. So those guys, like I said, have been a healthy group for the most part, and they're able to do multiple things. They're able to block. They're able to block in line. They're able to detach if we need to. And it's a pretty reliable group from an assignment standpoint. So as much as we can use those guys, we'd like to.
Every time we do these, I always learn something. And so I just thinking about having these guys every single week here to talk to on the podcast is so beneficial to the basically what I want to do here. And that's to educate football fans, to be smarter football fans, especially when it comes to this Miami Dolphins team. And I'll miss not having those guys every week. They're so informative. And here's Coach Eric Studisville, Dolphins co-OC and running backs coach, talking about the pass, or rather the run blocking execution of the offensive line, if he felt it's been good enough in recent weeks in this season. And Coach said there's more to it than just the offensive line that goes into your running game.
again, I don't necessarily think it's just it's not one unit that's responsible for it. There's different runs. The runs hit in different places. There's different schemes. So, you know, if we're running a toss play outside, that may be a different emphasis on who's the point of attack blocking than if you're running a dive play inside. So to put the responsibility on five guys and say that they're the only ones that affect, you know, what happens in a run game, I don't think that's not what we do. And that's not the beauty of this game. The beauty of this game is it takes 11 people to be coordinated, to have success on one play at a time. That's why you play this game. That's why you get involved in it, because it's the team concept that's important to you. So it's all of us involved in that, coaches from the diagram and the creation of the plays and the teaching of what we're doing to all the way down to the players, the execution. But it doesn't rely strictly on one person for the execution, the success, or the production. It's the group effort.
Very informative there from Coach. Again, love hearing what these guys have to say. And Tua spoke about that in his post-game presser on Sunday about how when you have 11 guys doing a job, if one person screws up, it can send the entire play kind of kaput. And you hear Coach Dudesville echoing that message and that sentiment there with the question about the run blocking this season from the Dolphins' offensive line and how to get the run game going in general. Let's go ahead and spin this thing forward and pick it up here with quarterbacks coach Charlie Fry, who was asked about the growth of Tua Tagovailoa in his first, or rather his second season here as a Miami Dolphin, his first under the tutelage of quarterbacks coach Charlie Fry.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's shown growth in, you know, the way he's played this year. I think as a young quarterback, the more reps you get, the more experience that you get, the more you're going to be able to take from that, the learning moments and the things that happen within that game. You know, we go over those corrections the next day in meetings, and then you try to apply it for the next week's game. And then you get into the overall picture of the growth and development more in the offseason, and then try and take some steps that way. But right now it's the things that happened in the Tennessee game, the corrections that we make, and trying to apply those going into this last week against New England.
And you heard Coach talk there about how right now it is about the Titans game. And so there was a follow-up question about ball security and how Tua can improve in that regard. And just looking at some of the numbers here for Tua this season, the interception percentage has jumped by a full percentage point from last season, from 1.7 up to 2.7%. And then we've also seen a lot more fumbles. Last year, just one fumble for Tagovailoa in 10 games played. But this year in 12 games, 9 fumbles, 9 times he's put the ball on the ground. That's just a little bit too many turnover-worthy plays, or turnover opportunities, I should say, for the opposing defense. So Coach Fry was asked about ball security and how Tua can get better in that regard. Thought his answer here was really good about the mental aspect of ball security.
I think, obviously, a focus of, you know, when the pocket breaks down and you have to move, sometimes the initial reaction is to separate your hands. You know, obviously you're getting the ball into a running position instead of a passing position. And usually that's where most of the fumbles happen, is that initial break to hands. So obviously you drill that, but the problem is when you drill that, there's you don't have that element of live contact, you know, the element of, man, this guy's coming to hurt me, this guy's coming to tackle me. So a lot of it is training your mind, more so than any type of drill of when there's contact, when you feel that coming, of really putting your body in between the ball and the defender. And it's more of a mental thing than, obviously you're going to drill it. You try and drill everything that's going to happen in the game, but being able to take the drill to the practice, to the game, is a lot of the mental side.
Interesting stuff there from a guy who's played in inclement weather. He was with the Seahawks there for a little bit, so he knows about bad, wet, rainy footballs and wind and all the stuff. And ball security, of course, a big part of that position. Let's go ahead and spin this thing forward to the special teams and coordinator Danny Crossman, who was asked about if the Dolphins lived up to his standards so far this season on special teams.
Obviously not. To be quite honest, we've never met my standards, but, you know, obviously this year, even a little bit more so, of not being where we need to be. Well, the list is as long as it always is. We need to be better at everything. I need to coach it better. We need to execute it better. When we have opportunities, we need to be able to take advantage of those opportunities. You know, lot to work on.
That second portion was a follow-up question about what specifically is on his list for things they have to improve. There you heard it. Let's go ahead and go to the defensive side of the football here with DC Josh Boyer, who was asked about the run defense and how they had issues on Sunday with the Titans, who rolled up 198 yards on the ground.
I mean, you know, some of it, you know, I mean, could be a little bit scheme related where we're trying to create negative plays. Some of it is, you know, them staying ahead of the chains and, you know, staying on track and, you know, not being able to really get them into situations where they need to throw the ball. And, you know, and then some of it, like I said, is, you know, is scheme issues. And then some of it is, you know, just fundamentals and techniques. And, you know, so those are the things, like I said, that, you know, when you review the film, you try to correct all those and then you get ready to play, you know, New England, who's a very good run offense. They can throw the ball. They do a lot of things. They're very multiple. They're very well coached. They got very good players. They got a very good offensive line, very similar to the team that we saw last week. Their receivers all block well. They all play hard. They're a physical, tough team. They're going to play for 60 minutes. So, again, we have a big challenge in front of us this week. So that's kind of really where our focus is.
Really found Coach's comment there about scheme things and trying to create negative plays in the running game was interesting. Obviously, we talked about one of the keys to the game was getting the Titans into those long down distances to get those free hitters, to get those blitz opportunities. Just didn't happen frequently enough in this game. We talked about that in the All 22 review about how Miami, the Titans game plan allowed them, or the execution of their plan allowed them to get to the part of the game plan where they could really kind of minimize those rush options and get into the different types of conflict, like the bootlegs and the rolls and the quarterback runs, all that fun stuff. That's fun for your offense, not so much when you have to defend it. Now let's go ahead and pick this up here with Dolphins linebackers coach Anthony Campanelli. And, you know, I think one of the things I might want to look at this summer is Jerome Baker's just charting his play because of how many different plays he made spots he made plays from, kind of a switch from full-time Mike linebacker to more off the edge in that Baltimore game, which of course coincided with Miami's defensive resurgence in the second half of the season. Coach Camp was asked about Jerome Baker's ability to play multiple spots, the selflessness to do that, and what he does or what it is about Jerome Baker that makes him able to get better every game and every season.
I think he's done a really good job. You know, he's been called upon to do a bunch of different things, and he's excelled in a lot of ways. I think he's continually improved over the course of the season, whether it be in the run game, you know, pass coverage and pass rush. So I think you know, people recognize that about him. I certainly do. In terms of just being around somebody every day, incredibly coachable, humble personality. And I think it's guys like that usually continue to get better.
That's a really fun quote to end that on there, talking about Jerome Baker. From the second level of defense, we move up to the front portion, and you guys heard me raving about Christian Wilkins' game on Sunday on the Tuesday recap podcast, and I just can't get enough of what this guy can do in terms of the physicality, the quickness, stack and shed, the eyes, the eye discipline, the ability to backdoor a play on the front side, just so many things he can do that really increases Miami's versatility, which we know is a key in this defense and on this team. And I think it also allows him to do what he did on Sunday and play over 85% of the snaps for this Dolphins defense. Here's Coach Clark, Dolphins D-line coach, on Christian Wilkins.
Yeah, I think, you know, credit to Christian. His versatility and how he's developed there has definitely helped us as a defense. And, you know, he can fill multiple roles. And I would say his willingness to do whatever role is asked of him is what's awesome. You know, it's not, you know, he never second guesses anything we're asking him to do. He goes full speed and he's has a real focus on the technique and fundamentals. I think that's where he's made his biggest strides. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we can have a good one with him on Sunday.
Glad he mentioned the technique and fundamentals, because that one play where I talked about how he locked out the guard and then tossed him back the other direction, you just saw everything that you see on those bags all August long in the training camp and the sweat and the blood, sweat, and tears they put out there on that practice field. You see that translate onto the game day field. That's always a good feeling for a player to have that kind of come to fruition throughout the course of the season, especially now in year number three for Christian Wilkins. Let's go ahead and take our first break and come back and finish up with two more coaches' media and quotes from Gerald Alexander and Charles Burks. Then we'll have a deep dive after that as well. Drive Time Podcast Wednesday edition. Keep it locked right here. Let's pick it back up with Gerald Alexander on this Coaches Availability Wednesday edition of the Drive Time podcast, who was asked, I asked him actually, about how you, as a guy who's played in the league and also coached in the league, on if this week, when you're eliminated from postseason contention, if you can learn anything about your team and your roster and the way guys prepare, and if the way guys work in a week that has an atmosphere or disappointment from Sunday that carries over, if it reveals anything about your team and the character those guys have. Wanted to ask GA because of his experience as a player and coach. Here's Coach.
Yeah, I think regardless of the circumstances, when you look at just the opportunity that it is to work and play in the NFL, you can never take any of these weeks for granted. You know, there's a lot of work that gets put in, you know, for these 17, you know, guaranteed opportunities that we have to go out there on the field together and compete. So, you know, whether it, you know, reveals character about an individual, you know, I don't put a lot of stock into that. I mean, I think that every game definitely you learn from, and it exposes, you know, really anybody, you know, strengths, weaknesses and things like that. But, you know, it's just another opportunity for us to do this together. Unfortunately, we didn't do what we wanted to do this season, but we have one more opportunity to go out there together because we know at this point, you know, it's the finale.
Gotta love that answer. That's why I asked him that question, because I knew he'd get a good one there from GA. And that's, I completely understand that mentality and that mindset. You can't preach the one day at a time mentality and then have a different week carry more weight than another week earlier or later in the season. Let's go ahead and finish up here with Charles Burks, who was asked about the elements of Noah Igbinoghene's game that makes him believe he can transition at some point in his career to a full-time player and have success in this league. Here's Charles Burks on Noah Igbinoghene.
Well, just his athletic ability. You know, I think he definitely has tools to be successful in the league, but there's a lot more to that. Not saying that he doesn't have those other things, but it's just not necessarily an athletic skill. There's a lot of athletic guys that have came in the NFL at that particular position. But there's more that goes into it. So it's not just necessarily being a really good athlete. You know, it's the preparation. It's the instincts. It's, you know, the film. It's all of that encompassing that can really change a game and take it to a high level.
So there you go. That's the end of our assistant coaches media availability. I believe we'll get the coordinators next Tuesday, and then that'll be a wrap on talking to those guys for quite some time once the season comes to a conclusion. But I wanted to go back here now to something Coach Godsey said off the top about making plays to move the football, which then can help you produce points and ultimately score more than the opposition does. And when he said how we've done it half the time and the other half the time we have not, it kind of got me thinking about what kind of deep dive I wanted to do. And so I became curious about differences between the 8 wins and the 8 losses. And then I got to thinking, what were the things that I specifically remember about those games? Things that I can look at besides numbers that I can find on Pro Football Reference or NFL True Media or the Jesus site, GSIS site, Pro Football Focus, or what have you, as far as what your resources are. Next Gen, I use that one a lot too. Something like, how many made and missed field goals did we have compared to our opponent in the wins and losses? Then also, how did teams beat us and how did they fail to do so? So I thought, let's look at blitz rate, for instance. That'll be one I can chart real quick. So this will be a short segment, but I wanted to compare some things that stood out over the 8-game sample size of victories and the sample size in defeats. And we can do this again come the offseason with much more time put into it, much more data and charting that goes into that. One of my favorite things to do with football is to chart things, and they always teach you something, whether or not your hypothesis or the opposite or something in between. You always learn something when you do these deep dive projects. So let's go ahead and jump right into that. But first, real quick, these words. Back here on the Drive Time podcast, and we are taking a look at the difference in a few statistical categories between Miami's 8 wins and 8 losses, and trying to find out what worked and did not work in the wins and the losses. And we start here with 4 stats I was curious to look at. And we could pull up rushing and passing and the very basic counting stats, which I did here also for a few of these ones, but I wanted to look at things that you have to kind of go back and peek through the game books to find out exactly what happened. And there's 2 stats in here that kind of qualify for that and 2 that don't. But One of them was field goals, and I became very curious about that, and that was the biggest find for me as far as my hypothesis went in terms of difference in how wins and losses were formulated this year by this Dolphins team. And in victories, the Dolphins were 13 for 15 on field goals, which is 81.3%. Check that, 13 for 16 for 81.3%. The opposing kickers were 15 for 19 in the victories. That's 78.9%, so nearly a wash. But when you get to the eight losses, Miami was 8 for 14 this year on field goals at 57.1%, and the opposition was 15 for 16, 93.8%. So 8 for 14 compared to 15 for 16, and I think it's the craziest part about that, as far as the field goals go, is that all three of the Dolphins' buzzer-beating losses came on buzzer-beater field goals. And in each of those games, Miami missed a field goal, and the opposing kickers went 3 for 3. So 9 for 9 in total, those small margins, and that's what it comes down to in this league. And so that was the biggest one for me. But from the victories, the offense on third down was 46 for 110. That's 41.8%. And then in the losses, the Dolphins were 42 for 108, so 38.9%. Just a few percentage bumps, point bump there from the victories and the losses. And of course, different quarterbacks played in those games as well, which obviously has an impact on those numbers. And then in the penalties per game for the Dolphins in the victories, there was 46 penalties for 360 yards. That was 5.75 penalties per game for 45 yards per game. And then in the losses, it was 54 penalties for 432 yards. That's 6.75 penalties for 54 yards a game. So one more penalty for 9 yards in the losses than in the victories. On blitzes versus how many dropbacks there were for the Dolphins offense, they were blitzed 88 times compared to 288 total dropbacks. That was 30.6% of the time in their victories. When the Dolphins lost, opposing teams blitzed us 86 times out of 380 dropbacks. That's a 22.6% blitz rate. And a lot of the blitz numbers when Jacoby Brissett was in this game, were in the game, were way, way down. So that was a huge fluctuation there as well. But I found that to be a little bit interesting as far as the Dolphins offense goes. Now, as far as the defense goes, compared to wins versus losses, the biggest differentiator you see here is obviously the third down defense. And of course, the third down defense got much better over the course of that 7-game winning streak. In the Dolphins' 8 victories this season, 39 third down conversions on 114 attempts. That's 33.3%. In the losses, 53 for 107. That's 49.5% and a 16.2% increase in third downs allowed. The blitzing numbers, I'm sure a lot of you wanted to hear that one. 156 blitzes on 319 dropbacks in the victories. That's a 48.9% blitz rate. When the opposing quarterback went back to pass in the losses, it was 130 for out of 311, so 41.8%, a 7.1% decrease in the losses in blitzing the quarterback. But again, those numbers can be skewed a little bit because of the way the game unfolds in terms of, you know, late game situations. It's all situational, so I don't know that that one really tells us all that much, but I was curious to find out the difference there. So that was really the key one that I looked at, and the field goal numbers, I mean, that was the outrageous one to me, was how field goal successes and failures, and I mean, I don't want to call it luck. I think the opposing team missing field goals a lot of times can come down to luck, but last year the Dolphins were 30 for 33 in field goal percentage, had the first team all pro. This year actually had the lowest field goal percentage of any team in the National Football League. We talk about fine margins. That's a good area to look at for how the record swung from 10 wins to 8 and possibly 9 wins if the Dolphins can find a victory on Sunday against the Patriots. But again, small margins, big difference. Some others here with some miscellaneous stats and information. The turnover differential in the victories was +4. They had 2 games they won with more than one turnover. The Houston game when they had 5 turnovers, and the Jets game they had 3 turnovers. There was 2 games without a turnover they won, and they won 4 games with 1 turnover exactly. But +4 in the victories. In the losses, -7 in the turnover differential department. 16 takeaways in the wins, 7 takeaways in the losses. Now, the point differential, I thought was going to go a different direction. Then I remembered back to the Buccaneers game and the Bills game and the Titans game, and that threw this entire equation out of whack. But the Dolphins' points four in their victories, 184. That's 23 points per game. In their wins, as far as points allowed, just 98 points, 12 and a quarter points per game in the eight victories. That's a plus 86 differential. In the losses, they scored 124 points, 60 points fewer. That's 15.5 points per game in those losses. In the points allowed category, 251. So what is that? 153 points more allowed in the eight losses compared to the eight wins. That's 31.4 points per game. That's a 2.5 times increase there, if my math is right, which probably isn't, in terms of points allowed per game. That's a minus 127 point differential in the losses. So plus 86 in the eight wins, minus 127 in the eight losses. Last thing I wanted to explore here was the wins at the buzzer at the hands of the Dolphins and what exactly happened in those games. My point here is, again, the razor thin margins in this league, and you could do this in a few of our wins as well, where you find four or five plays in those games that could have gone the other way, really only to me in the Patriots game. Otherwise, the Dolphins were pretty much clear winners in a lot of those other contests. But we start off here with, there's three games, Vegas, Jacksonville, and Atlanta. And we start here with Vegas. First off, Derek Carr played so damn well in that game. And just to that point, I wasn't a huge fan of his game early on in his career, but he sure as hell has won me over. What a terrific player he has become in his NFL career. But in this game, he hit maybe his best throw of the season on that 32-yard pass to Bryan Edwards under pressure in a tight window, and that was on 2nd and 10. If you don't get that, all of a sudden Miami has a chance for one of their blitz packages or creative calls on 3rd and 10 to get off the field, but instead they convert and kick a field goal, and then the Dolphins drive back into field goal range and had a shot play into the end zone on 1st down to Will Fuller, and we've seen that call made before. We've seen it not made before. It doesn't get called. The Dolphins cannot hit either of the next two passes and then convert on 50-yard field goal from Jason Sanders. And then the Raiders, again, from Carr to Edwards on a 2nd and 15 for 35 yards, and that time was backed up, too, with under 3 minutes to play. You get off the field there. You get the football back with either a chance to win or, if you don't succeed, to tie the football game. But because they hit that, Peyton Barber, one more run, and they're back into field goal range, and they hit it at the buzzer. And again, 3 for 3 for Daniel Carlson in that game, and the Dolphins had a missed field goal at the end of the first half in that game. For the Jacksonville game, played pretty good on defense, especially when you consider the fact that both Xavien Howard and Byron Jones were down in that game. But Jacksonville kicker Matthew Wright went 3 for 3 in that game and hit from 54 and 53 yards in the fourth quarter. He's 4 for 6 this year from 50 plus. So 2 for 2 in the Dolphins game, 2 for 4 otherwise. He didn't hit 250 plus yarders in any other game this year. To his credit, he is 17 for 20, and it looks like he's going to have a long-term solution there at the kicking position in Jacksonville. But he entered that game 0 for 1 kicking in his career, and the Jags had gone a full year without a made field goal. Just a weird nugget from that game that the Jaguars were able to hit big field goals late in that football game, which was the difference ultimately. In the Atlanta Falcons game, that was the second and the last time the Falcons offense hit 30 points in a game this season, their second highest yardage output and their third highest passing output of the season against this Dolphins defense that really transformed a week or two after this. And the way it ended, with Miami having two touchdown drives in offense, a defensive takeaway, and a forced punt in there, then they come back after all that, and Miami gets a lead with 2:27 to play in the game, and they complete an incredible catch up the perimeter to rookie tight end Kyle Pitts for 28 yards. A phenomenal catch by a hell of a player. And that was after he already hit for 23 yards. So he piles up in quick succession 51 yards of offense on two plays. Then the Falcons were able to run for a first down on three plays, where if the Dolphins get a stop on any of those, they're going to have about a minute and some change to try to navigate the field on the other side and get a game-winning field goal from Tua and the offense, which in that fourth quarter, they were moving the ball just fine. But the Falcons run for a first down, exhaust the timeouts and clock and any chance of answering, and they kick it to go ahead and win that football game. So all three of those games, Miami's missing a field goal, and the opposition goes 3 for 3, 9 for 9 in total. Those small margins, there they are. I just think those three games, and clearly evident by the buzzer-beating ending, but the way they played out, they show you that the margin between wins and losses, the margin between Week 17 elimination and fighting for division championships and high seeding in the postseason can come down to a play or a moment. And that's kind of what you look back on each of these last two seasons, as you are just one or two wins shy of getting into the postseason tournament. Now, there are plenty more things, but that's a two-day project I did to look into, you know, what were the differences in the victories and losses. You can look at personnel groupings, ran route concepts, different types of blitz packages and games and stunts and things of that nature. That's all for the offseason. I just wanted to give you guys a sample taste of that on this edition of the Drive Time Podcast, which has come to its conclusion. You all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at WingfieldNFL. Follow the team across all socials at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank Podcast with Seth and OJ. Of course, our YouTube channel, the Coordinator Media Availabilities, will be posted to the channel today. You can also find Dolphins Today on YouTube, as well as MiamiDolphins.com for written, photo, video, podcast content, everything on your Miami Dolphins. Until next time, fins up, Caroline. Daddy is coming home.